I came here to be the manager of Manchester United, not to be the coach of Manchester United. And that is clear. I know that my name is not Tuchel, is not Conte, is not Mourinho, but I'm the manager of Manchester United. And it's going to be like this for 18 months or when the board decided to change.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Belton.
Hello, Happy New Year.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello, and Happy New Year as well.
Yes, yes, it is 2026, yes. The clausura of 2025-26 season is just starting. And of course, you know, we start the year off shedding off all that excess from the previous year. We look ahead and we think, how am I going to improve myself? How am I going to face a new year without any of the baggage from the old year? Terry, how do you face a new year? How do you think, yes, 2026 is going to be my year?
Well, I usually try to engineer a sacking. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't work. I appear to have drawn the short straw on this occasion because I seem to be one of the few people in this country who hasn't been fired.
Yes, today has been very busy, isn't it? Because we're only 5 days into the year, and already in England and Scotland, no less than four managers in the top flight have been sacked. We're only 5 days in. It's just insane, isn't it?
It's already started to be a really, really crazy, crazy year, 2026, isn't it? So yeah, Maresca engineered his own sacking. For a lot of reasons, but mainly with comments to the media over the Christmas period. Amorim engineered his own sacking last night on telly by pointing out that there was issues behind the scenes. And Wilfred Nancy engineered his own sacking by just being a really bad manager. So, yeah, and there's Aberdeen sacked their manager as well. So, yeah, a lot going on these islands.
Yes. Great start to the year, isn't it, Terry?
Well, if you enjoy this kind of content, then it's terrific. And as podcasters, we really do enjoy this kind of content. It's not so good for the people who have been sacked, unless, of course, they wanted to be sacked. I think that at least 50% of those who have been sacked were quite up for it, frankly, and had enough. Although I wouldn't mind betting that, in fact, Wilfred Nancy had probably had enough as well by the end of that Celtic Rangers game, certainly judging by his expression and the way he trudged off the pitch at the end of it. So yeah, it's great if you love merry-go-rounds, Graham, or indeed if you like a carousel, because we're in for one.
Yes, we are indeed. We are indeed. It is going to be a crazy time over the next couple of weeks as we see managers coming in, managers moving around. Some managers who are successful in their roles at the moment really, really making bad choices as well as they decide to move to awful, awful football clubs. Now, the Chelsea situation is obviously a bit weird because obviously Chelsea are part of a multi-club model. They own Strasbourg, which they've been treating pretty shabbily all season because they've been rinsing them for players whenever they want. Basically, Strasbourg is their current account for players, isn't it, at the moment, isn't it? It's just somewhere where they just have a few dotted around. They just dip in and out. Current account, Terry, or swear job? What do you think?
It's definitely got a switch card vibe about them, I'd say. I mean, more of a Monza and Revolut, you know. I'd say they put them in that kind of category. I mean, other such merchants are available. But those are the headliners. I saw Strasbourg play Crystal Palace and they were amazing. They were magnificent. And those young Chelsea players that they've got in their side were really, really good. I mean, they were a fantastic Chelsea B squad. And it was a bit embarrassing to watch, you know, the FA Cup winners, you know, being run rings around, frankly, even though, to be fair, we should have scored. We hit the post twice. It could have gone 2-0 up in that game. But that aside, they were terrific. That ground's got a lot of energy. There's a great support there. And I was looking at Liam Rosinha and thinking, well, if Oliver Glasner does go at the end of the season, I wonder whether or not there's a potential for Liam Rosinha to come to Crystal Palace, and that might be a good next step for him to come and, you know, come and take over a middle-class Premier League club. So, yeah, so that's kind of where we were up until the last 48, 72 hours or so. And obviously, the situation has changed somewhat. Understandably, Strasbourg fans have mixed feelings about things at the moment because, you know, they're top of the Conference League. They're sixth or seventh in Ligue 1. They're having a good season, but it's quite clear that they are clearly a B squad, or to use an American parlance, a triple A side for Chelsea. And that's got to be demeaning, frankly. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how I'd feel about that. I don't think I'd feel very good about it, even if things were going quite well, because I just think, well, at the moment they're feeling quite well, but what happens if, I don't know, they take all of their our best players away, which they're going to do, because they're not even our players, and take our coach away and replace him with some no-mark like, ooh, I don't know, Gary O'Neill, just to pluck a name out of the air.
Yeah, and the whole thing at Chelsea has had quite a personal twist for us, hasn't it? Because when Maresca was fired, and obviously Rossignol is being lined up to come in, the choice of caretaker was quite surprising and a familiar name to us on this podcast, isn't he?
Yes. So former Whiteleaf, I think second in command,
yes.
Callum McFarlane, who was around in the previous incarnation of Whiteleaf before they folded and became AFC Whiteleaf. He went off to City and then had found his way into the dugout at Chelsea against Manchester City, which is some progression and credit to him. So, yeah. Very familiar to us.
Yeah, 5 years ago, him and Harry Hudson, who was also in the dugout for the City game, were the management team at Whiteleaf FC, our non-league club. So it's great to see how he's progressed, and it was even better to see him lead his awful football club to a draw against City, which I really did enjoy. So, all right, let's talk about Chelsea. The whole thing about Maresca being sacked, the whole messaging over the last few days has been somewhat odd, hasn't it, Terry? It's not what you normally expect from a football club, but this is Chelsea, an awful football club. So the messaging has been pretty much on brand for them, hasn't it?
I mean, if by that you mean awful, then yes, I'd say I agree with you. Yeah, obviously, before Christmas, there was the worst 48 hours of my career press conference that Maresca gave, that nobody really quite fully understood what that meant.
Yeah.
But that seems to have been the first domino in this particular chain. And then it kind of ending after Maresca had left with a fairly bizarre off-the-record-ish briefing to journalists that he had not respected the process, he'd not respected the medical staff, and that he'd been talking to other clubs with permission but without permission, and that he was just generally speaking being generally awful, which, you know, it's Chelsea. I would have thought that that is what you have to do. So yeah, it's a strange way of going about things. I wouldn't suggest to you that results were necessarily driving this. I don't think this was a question of can we find a better coach. It does would appear that there's been a complete breakdown in the relationship between club and the coach. And yeah, it feels like a very modern way to get yourself out of your contract, Graham, to sort of like create enough of a storm. There's got to be different ways of looking at this. The way I'm looking at this, or the way that I'm, the perspective I'm choosing to adopt, is that the Maresca is not happy, wanted to leave, so created a bit of a poo storm. Sorry, I'm trying to cut down the bad language on this podcast. It's my resolution. To try to create a bit of a poo storm in order to engineer an egress. So I'm not changing my resolution for using Ponty words. Get one at a time. So I think that it's all probably worked out quite nicely for Maresca. And yeah, it does look like Chelsea have kind of got a ready-made replacement for him, although I would imagine that he's coming a little bit earlier than anticipated. But it certainly makes for what is likely to be an interesting few weeks or months.
I did find it quite surprising because there was a little bit of a time gap between the worst 48 hours comment and his eventual exit. But of course, Chelsea have got a well-publicised end-of-season review, which Pochettino fell foul of, despite doing all right and giving them a bit of solidity and being generally quite a good coach. I don't know whether that's been something that's been on Maresca's mind and other people have been giving him options, and he's, whether with permission, as Terry said, or without, talking to people. I mean, there's lots of talk about him going to Manchester City, whether Pep's going to hang around. I don't know how true that is, but it seems to be a lot of chuntering and noise in the media about the potential for that, although I don't know whether that's just clickbait, but he seemed to be a fairly successful coach at Chelsea. It felt like he was at home there. It really felt like he fitted in with how things were working, and I didn't think there was much disquiet at all. But of course, we don't get to see behind the scenes. I think you're probably right. I think him and a few other managers have engineered that exit. But when you're the public face of the club and you're the one taking questions from your mandatory press conferences before and after games, you know, it takes a hell of an individual to be able to hold that together when you're receiving some quite probing questions when things are potentially going wrong in the background. And we know that, you know, Chelsea is an awful club and have had challenges with their coaches for years, not just with this ownership, but with previous ones. And it just feels like, I don't know who would want to go to Chelsea now other than someone who's told he has to. Chelsea fans seem immune to this, but while I'm here, I might as well go into it. Seem quite happy to be involved in quite clearly dirty, dirty Russian money, and then quite happily being involved in some questionable financing with their current owners, which may or may not include the Saudi state, and are happy just to have managers turn over and turn over and turn over. It seems like a strange club to be part of as a fan, I would think, but certainly a strange club to be part of as a coach. And I think Maresca is probably quite happy he's out of it. I mean, otherwise you wouldn't try and engineer an exit, which is, I agree with Terry, is exactly what he did. So where he'll end up next, I would imagine there'd be a lot of people interested in his signature, because he clearly is a talented coach who has kept the lid on Chelsea right up to the 48 hours comment. I think he's going to go to better things than Chelsea could ever provide for him.
I think personally that there'll be clubs queuing up to take him, because, yeah, if you can get something out of the box of frogs that is Chelsea Football Club, then yeah, why not? Then just sign him up. I think really, given what he's had there, he's managed to actually manage it quite well. Do you think the same, Terry? Or do you think Maresca's just yet another board fraud?
No, I mean, I think, you know, I mean, you know, he's won the Conference League and he's won the Club World Cup, Graham. I mean, like, you know, there's just no arguing with those results, Joe.
I'll end this conversation right here then, shall
I? Let's move on to the next topic. He did an excellent job turning around Leicester. I know Leicester were able to keep their squad together, and I appreciate that. And I know that he had been involved in the club beforehand, so he knew the players and he knew the situation. Nevertheless, it's not straightforward turning around a relegated side and getting them straight up with the comparative ease, you know, in relation to the fact that it's a championship, that he did. Chelsea is a bit of a basket case of a club. As we know, its recruitment is a bit funny and a bit weird. They sign a lot of players. They loan out a lot of players. And it isn't always straightforward, I think, managing that situation. But to actually produce some tangible results is to his credit. He certainly didn't do a bad job there by any means. And I would imagine that, yes, his reputation is enhanced sufficiently. And if it's true that he was speaking with Manchester City, speaking with Juventus, and that presupposes that those clubs were speaking with him. So, you know, I would imagine that it won't be too long before he's back at work. I mean, there are some vacancies now, obviously, but that might be a little bit too soon for him. It might be wise for him to sort of, like, you know, draw his salary from Bluco for the next few months and then find something in the summer where he's got a full pre-season rather than trying to come in at this point and put out a fire, which is what he will almost certainly be asked to do. So I think he's got that luxury. He may well go straight to the top of the list of most desirable coaches in the summer. When I say desirable, I mean desired to work for. I don't mean sexy. Although, you know.
Although he's a very good looking man, isn't he?
You know, I mean.
Well, I think we've said enough about an awful football club.
And their sexy managers.
And their sexy managers. Let's discuss another awful football club in Manchester United. Now, we haven't really had too much proof of their awfulness recently. They've been pretty quiet. They did a lot of stuff, the whole sort of taking away free meals from the staff, all that sort of stuff, all that Sir Jim Ratcliffe stuff that they were doing. And it seemed to have quietened down. Results hadn't really improved, although they did manage to somehow find themselves in sixth place by being, frankly, very ordinary. But this morning, we woke up to the news that Ruben Amorim had been sacked by the club. And I think it caught quite a few people off guard. I mean, yes, it was yet another disappointing result against Leeds and a rather odd outburst, but then we're used to odd outbursts. That's the Premier League way now, I think. Yeah, were you surprised by the move to sack Amorim?
Yeah, I was, because Radcliffe had said, I mean, the reason this all went quiet is Radcliffe said back in November time, certainly end of summer latest, that that you know the coach needed to have years to prove himself and not just, we don't just make decisions just based on knee jerk. And that felt like a really smart thing to say. I think it took the pressure out of the situation and Man United just quietly got on with it. And as you said, got up to sixth. So it felt like that was okay. I did think it was a bit odd when they gave Wolves their first points in some time. Not that I thought that was enough to sack him, but it did seem like a really poor result. But again, it felt like there was some stability there because of what Radcliffe had said. And, you know, the media was looking elsewhere, looking at Chelsea and Liverpool continuing not to achieve. So the fact that they did this now, I mean, it's a very similar thing to the Maresca situation. We heard what he said at the end of yesterday. There were clearly issues behind the scenes. I thought something very interesting as well that he said, because he said, I came to Manchester United to be the manager. I'm not the coach, which, I mean, we've talked about the difference between managers and coaches before. And Amorim comes from, I always understood, the tradition of a coach within a modern footballing model. And so to hear that come from him, I thought was a little strange. And I'm still trying to kind of work out what that was all about. But from what I was reading today, you know, he seems to be someone who, rightly or wrongly, wants as much control as he can possibly have. And I think that Manchester United trying to change to a more modern model with a director of football and so on and so forth, and a head coach, I thought that was really kind of out of keeping of that, with that. So maybe there's something happening there. But it certainly seemed to be something quite forthright for a manager or a coach to say, considering he hasn't really got that job by the scruff of the neck as yet, has he? So there's some background to this as well, because if you remember, he was brought in around the time that Dan Ashworth, well, in the few months that he was at Manchester United. What I was reading today, the journalist was saying that Ashworth was completely against Amorim coming in because he said he's inflexible, but a lot of the things he was accused of, and we don't have the players here to deal with the type of formation and the type of style of football that he plays. How true that is, I don't know. But Ashworth was out a few months later, and Amorim was in. And add to that the fact that Amorim said he didn't want to come at that point because it was November time in 2024. He wanted to wait at the end of the season. And whoever he was dealing with at Manchester United, I think it was Jason Wilcox, wasn't it? So it's now or never. So they brought him in at the wrong time. Possibly, from what I've read, brought in the wrong person, had the wrong players for that, and added fuel to an already quite incendiary Manchester United situation, and quite possibly, looking back, let it go on too long. Maybe they should have pulled the trigger sooner, because obviously form has turned around from last season, but clearly they had someone who was inflexible, not just in terms of his approach on the pitch, you could argue, but it seems inflexible when he's dealing with other individuals. Or maybe there were more issues going on there. There were the wrong team around him, above him, within that structure. So there's a lot there to unpick, but the short answer is, yes, I was very surprised, and I'm not sure who would want to go to that bin fire, because, I mean, it's now crazier than Spurs, and that is really saying something.
I was puzzled also by Amorim's sort of remarks about head coach / manager, because, yeah, like you, Jan, and also specifically, I mean, literally that's his job title. He is the head coach. He's not the manager. So yeah, maybe he felt that things were just coming to an end and was just trying to get a bit of agency before he realised he was going to get the boot. I don't know. Or maybe he just come to his wit's end anyway. I wasn't that surprised that he'd been fired, because I've been imagining him to have been fired before now. I'm surprised he's lasted this long. And I feel a lot of it may well have just simply been bloody-mindedness, perhaps, or shall I say a desire to persist and give him as much time as possible by Sir Jim Ratcliffe and by Jason Wilcox and others who make the decisions at the club. It's difficult to come up with a contrary opinion to the way United have played and the tactics that he uses. He has used a specific way of playing that he insists is the correct way to do things and will bear fruit in the end. But it's happening in a moment in the Premier League, certainly, where, as we've discussed previously, there are some tactical changes there's a sort of a bit of a sea change. It's expressing itself through long throws, but it's not quite as simple or straightforward as that. But that is symptomatic of what's happening here. I think what you do, you look at Sunderland, an excellent example of pure tactical pragmatism. You know, what do we need to do to win this game? What do we need to do to beat this opposition? Let's just play the football that we need to play to win football matches and not worry about philosophies and specific principles or advanced principles. I think that that kind of pragmatism seems to be the tactics du jour at the moment. And the best coaches are getting the best results out of that. And I think Sunderland kind of exemplifies that. That is not what Amorim is doing. Amorim almost feels like a bit of a throwback, which is ridiculous for such a young coach who was, up till a year and a half ago, one of the most sought after, one of the most coveted coaches, one of the best coaches in Europe. And so it's all kind of narrative nonsense, I suppose. I don't disagree with what Jan says about it being a bin fire at all. All I would say is, though, is that those players are not terrible. They are not objectively terrible. And the right coach, who perhaps is a little bit more disciplined, maybe someone like Labrice, for example. Well, you know, I had to pay you a compliment, but then take it away. Coming in there and saying, okay, well, let's look at these players. What can they do? And let's just play to their strength. And it's hard not to imagine that United would win more matches than they lose. They might not achieve their ambitions, but that's a different argument, I think, and a different topic for another time, talking about Man United's place in the order of things, which has definitely gone down. But they're certainly not getting the best out of those players, and the right coach will do that. And I feel certain that I said this the last time they fired a coach, and indeed the time before as well. But I still think it's true.
Yeah, can I think of anyone who's managed Man United and Sunderland in recent years? I'm sure it'll come to me at some point. Now, of course, Man United are part of a multi-club model as well. Ineos own Nice in France, but they won't be getting the manager from there because Nice sacked their manager just a couple of days before New Year's. Coincidence? Maybe they're having a big clear out of their head coaches. But Frank Heiss was sacked and replaced by Whispering Claude Puel. So who knows? Maybe Whispering Claude will be returning after his not entirely successful spell in the Premier League, but maybe that's the way they'll go. But it's probably not. Now, Regis Labrisse is actually on the betting. He's a bit down. He's not as high as the head coach of your club, though, Terry.
Mm.
Oliver Glasner, serial winner, and Man United love serial winners. They always bring them in and ruin them, chew them up and throw them away. So what do you think? He is not daft enough to take that, or is his own personal hubris going to take him away from South London and up to Manchester? Because he's only got, what, 5 and a bit months left of his contract. Now's the time, isn't it?
Now is not the time. Now is definitely not the time. And I'm not saying that as a Palace fan. I'm saying that as if I was in Glasner's position. I certainly think that I would have the ego, if I was a coach of a Premier League football team that had just won a cup, I would think that I had the ability to tame Manchester United. All coaches have, because otherwise, you know, you can't possibly make it as a coach and as a manager without having some kind of ego. You must have belief and faith in yourself and your ability to take on the biggest challenges. And that's why good coaches will go there, because they want to be the guy that does it. They want to be the guy that turns this club around, you know. And so I think that there's a big pull. And not to mention they pay extremely well as well. So there's lots of good reasons for going there. I just feel that with Glasner at this point, he would be going into a very difficult situation. He went into a difficult situation at Palace. But the order of difficultness, I think, is going to be much, much greater at United, because there's just so much scrutiny. There'll be so much gaze. I think this will be a terrible moment for him to go. My instinct is that United will give it to Darren Fletcher until the end of the season and appoint Glasner.
Mm.
That is the position that I'm taking at the moment. Obviously, that's based on pure vibes. No one's worried. I mean, I think Glasner would want that job. I think that he would welcome the opportunity, he'd welcome the challenge. I think that there's every chance that United would want Glasner, even though, as we know, he can be troublesome and spiky. He's got a good relationship with Steve Parish, but he says stuff publicly that I'm sure that the ownership of Crystal Palace would rather him not say. But that is also the world that we live in as well. I think we live in that world now where coaches are a little bit more happier to be a bit more transparent with the media about their feelings. And I think that this would be, you know, I hate to say it, but this would probably be, if he's not going to re-sign at Crystal Palace, then I think that that's probably actually a good move. One, because, you know, it's a big challenge, and if he's successful, then come riches. But also, if he fails, we all get to have a good laugh at his hubris.
We
so
do.
It wins. It's win-win in a way, and Palace will have plenty of time to find a replacement in the summertime, so, and they're already looking.
They'll have Maresca there, won't they? He's already living in London, why not?
We could, as a club, do far worse. I mean, I would suggest that Maresca is a Champions League coach, as we have discussed. So I'd be astonished if he went to Crystal Palace, because I think we're too small fry for him. But I don't know. We don't know. It depends what reputational damage has been done by this whole Chelsea fiasco. But I think pissing off Chelsea, I think that's a win in a lot of people's eyes.
Yeah, and who do you think is going to take over at United? Lebris?
No, I'd be stunned if he went to Manchester United. I mean, he is unproven at this level. He's only done half a season at this level and one season in the Championship. So I'll take the little comfort I can from that. Stop stroking your chin, Terry. I don't know who would want to go for it. They've talked about Southgate in the past. He's on the betting. I don't know if he'd want to do that. Poch. He's got a World Cup to prepare for, but after that, then maybe he might fancy a return to these shores. That feels, along with Glasner, like the sensible option for them. I genuinely hope Glasner doesn't go there. I hope he stays with Palace and builds on what he's already achieved. And maybe there's just a bit of toing and froing over a new contract and maybe getting some promises on some signings at Palace. But anyway, we're not talking about Palace. So I think it would be a shame if he went there and had his reputation that he's, I mean, he already has in Germany, but his reputation that he's built over here, going to Man United and have it just flushed down the bog like everybody else's. Whereas, I don't know, it feels like Poch is someone who's got a bit more gravitas and could maybe go in there with, and kind of call the shots a bit and demand things his way. He could be the one. Or will they go for Maresca? I mean, that feels too obvious, but which side of Manchester was he talking to?
He's already proved that he doesn't mind who he works for. So, yeah, he's not fussy. But same with Poch as well, though. Yeah, he's really not fussy about where he works. So what about Tuchel? Could we get a situation on the eve of the World Cup that Tuchel announces, oh, yeah, by the way, I've signed for Man United. Do a Lopetegui when he was manager of Spain. Of course, he won't be sacked like Lopetegui was just before the tournament, but that could happen, couldn't it?
I think that definitely could happen. I mean, that's in the same mould as Poch, really, isn't he?
Yeah.
Get a World Cup win under his belt and then off he goes. I think the problem with the Lopetegui thing is that once that gets out, it completely overshadows the World Cup, which is why they took the decision they did. So if they did that, they'd have to be really careful with the communication there. Otherwise, people will hate Man United even more than they already do.
Yeah, I think that there was a lot of that also speaks to the relationship at the time and possibly now between Real Madrid and the Spanish FA as well, as not being a particularly good relationship. And that dynamic doesn't exist here in England. I think that there will be a gentleman's agreement that everyone will just keep their mouths shut until after the World Cup, and then he's announced then. And the longer this goes on, the more likely that becomes the case, and it just becomes an open secret, which is the English way, isn't it? Let's be honest with you. That's because everyone knows it's true, but no one's talking about it until it's time to do so. I quite like that idea of Tuchel going to Manchester United, because I think it will be fun. I think it will be good, especially if England win a World Cup. It will be pretty amazing to witness. But I suppose it all depends on whether or not they can live for a half a season with a caretaker coach. Athletic Comments Guys, which is admittedly a niche cohort of Man United support, nevertheless, they are there. They're quite fancy Ollie. Bring back Ollie for the rest of the season.
But, Ollie back, you know, at the wheel.
There is a cohort of United fans that will always go back to Ollie because they just love him and they don't have imagination.
This is the whole problem with Manchester United, is that they still believe they are what they were, and not accepting the way things are now. And the way things are now is that you're on the edge of Europe club. You're not world beaters anymore.
Yeah.
And you need to accept where you are and build it back up from the beginning. Don't go harking back to the old days. You're not going to get a Giggs or a Scholes or a Ferdinand or a Keane in your team again. And you're not going to get a Alex Ferguson in the dugout. You know, reinvent yourselves.
Well, do you know what? This is what I kind of thought when he made that manager comment yesterday. There was something in the back of my head that reminded me of when Van Gaal was on his final days there, when he said, respect the manager. And this was after he won the cup with them. And it was just the fact that he used the word manager, and you don't normally hear European coaches say that or make a point of saying it. And this is entirely made up, and this is my headcanon talking. But Ferguson is always around that club, and he's always talking to the current head coaches. And if he's saying to them, always tell them that you're the manager, not the head coach. If he's saying that to them, then he is perpetuating this whole thing of the manager rather than the new model. As I say, that's completely made up in my head. But it's something that seems to fit, and it fits with me anyway. And I just wonder if that whole thing, it's not just the personnel in there. I think it's just the aura of that club that they love living in the past because the past was very successful. You don't have to go too far back. It's only, it is 12 years now since they won a title and Ferguson left. But those were good times. So, of course you want that. And you want anything that has a link to that. But every time you hear something about the way that Man United are run, you can read into it because there's so much comment about it. There's so many ideas that come out there. And I've just added to it as well now. So, woohoo! Good times.
That's a fair analysis. It's a narrative-heavy analysis, but there's a whiff of truth about that. Go back to Busby and then go back to what happened after Busby and how that ended. And it took them decades to get back to where they were. And I think a lot of people always felt that when Ferguson would leave, he should leave. You know, he should leave the club because, you know, the club needs to move on, and he didn't, and he won't. I think it's easy to judge Sir Jim Ratcliffe because he does horrible things, and he has a reputation for just generally doing horrible things. You know, he's a billionaire who won't pay his taxes. He wants the taxpayer to pay for his stadium upgrade. He sacks members of staff, all of that. But it's difficult to judge how successful he is going to be at changing United as a football club while they've still perhaps got Ferguson around, because you've still got that emotional link to a past that is now gone. Yeah, the Premier League has changed an awful lot. The quality of the teams are much better. There are more competitors for United's titles. You've got the rise of Arsenal. You know, you've got the rise of the middle class clubs. They're not necessarily winning the points that Man United could be winning, but they're signing and recruiting the players that once upon a time Man United would have recruited. And it's a different ecosystem now. And United have to live in that, and they have to be the best versions of themselves in order to achieve that. And they are singularly failing to do that. And a lot of that could be, Graham, is that they are looking too much to their past. And it seems harsh to single out Ferguson. And again, it might just simply be just looking back at previous narratives of Manchester United and then imposing them into this current situation, which may not be accurate. But it's a good and interesting and fun way of looking at things, and it may not be altogether untrue either.
Well, as I said at the top of the show, there were four sackings in the opening days of this year, and Wilfred Nancy was one that happened today as well. 31 days he was at Celtic. That was less than Big Ange was at Nottingham Forest. That's a shocking short amount of time for anyone to be in charge of a football club. Just 8 games. I think we should all spare a thought now for Martin O'Neill, who woke up this morning, had a little lie-in, thought, well, this is it for me now. I'll enjoy retired life here. And you know that phone is ringing right now and expecting him to be in work tomorrow morning, bright and early. Come in, Martin.
Do you think Martin's got a smartphone, or do you think he's still got his old Nokia from back when he was, or maybe a BlackBerry from when he was Celtic?
It was on his landline, he was called.
Yeah. With a ring dial.
Yeah.
He must be doing an Al Pacino in Godfather 3 right now, listening. Just when I thought I was out, they dragged me back in. Yeah, he's definitely going to be back there. I mean, because the ownership, while they're still there, while they're clinging onto power at Celtic, have to go back to something that the fans are going to tolerate. And they will tolerate Martin O'Neill because he was incredibly successful there. You know, we've talked in the past of the problems that existed. Celtic, I think the Wilfred Nancy thing is just another one of those. Brendan Rodgers walked because of what was happening there, and he felt he was being made a scapegoat. There's so much disquiet, which we've talked about, amongst the supporter groups there. Wilfred Nancy was clearly the wrong guy because the results prove that. But something needs to change there because he should have gone in and done really well. I mean, there's a lot of backing. You know, it's not like it's a cash poor club, Celtic. They're a big fish in a relatively small pond, and historically they've dominated along with the other side of Glasgow. But something needs to change at Celtic, definitely. And I don't think it's just a new coach.
It is clear that something needs to change at Celtic at the top, and I do acknowledge that. But this is a football team that, even when it's below par, is still going to win more games than lose. I mean, that is a shocking record for a coach to come in. I mean, really, you can just put your feet up for 6 weeks and probably still get 12 points. That sounds really disparaging, and I'm exaggerating somewhat, but really, you know, it does not take much for Celtic to win football matches in the FPFL. Doesn't mean that they're going to be as good as Hearts. Doesn't mean that they're going to not win they're going to win the title. But it certainly means that you're going to do better, win the League Cup to begin with as well. Utterly unforgivable. To go in and an attempt to impose yourself in this way midway through the season is just ridiculous. You look at the way Martin O'Neill had them set up. You do that. You get your feet under the table. I mean, he's come all the way from Columbus, Ohio, to do this job. What is the rush? This is a team that will win by default if you just let the team play in a way that they're comfortable. And then you spend the next few months going through the routines about how you want to play. This is the three at the back system we're going to play from next season, lads. This is how we're going to do it. You earn the players' trust and you move forward then. For me, that's just leadership. I think he's really let himself down there, Wilfred Nancy. I think he really has. He had an excellent opportunity and he spurned it. And he should feel pretty, pretty lousy about himself. I know there's stuff going on at the club, and I know it was a terrible hire because he clearly wasn't up to it. But you'd be given an opportunity there to really make your mark. All I would say in response to Martin O'Neill is, oh, mate.
Oh, yes, 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 yes. He's coming. You know it. You know it.
As if Scottish football couldn't be more interesting this season. The return of Big Ange. Oh, my God. It's just too much.
It's got to happen. It's got to happen. The hero's return. It is there. It's got everything, everything.
Please.
Please, please. But all the drama this weekend will not be about new managers and old managers. The drama will be about the third round of the FA Cup, won't it? Our box set has got no less than 4 FA Cup ties filling it up, because I've also managed to shoehorn 2 AFCON quarterfinals in there, and also there's Inter Milan versus Napoli as well. But Terry, you've got away to Macclesfield for potentially Oliver Glasner's last game as Palace manager. How do you feel about that?
I'm really nervous about that. It's got classic third round upset, hasn't it? Non-league club at home to failing, frankly, you know, FA Cup holders and Premier League club. I mean, it's just, you know, Palace well in the throes of this mid-season sort of like post-Christmas sort of like massive wobble. It's not even a wobble. It's a weeble. It's a massive weeble that's going on there. They're really up against it, Palace, at the moment. And the last thing they want to do is go to an unfamiliar ground and play an unfamiliar team who are going to be absolutely up for it. And everyone is going to be looking at that game saying, that's the one, lads. This is where the big upset is. The FA Cup holders getting knocked out in the third round by a non-league side. And then Oliver Glasner going to Manchester United the next week. Yeah, it's one of these situations where the narrative just takes control and makes it happen, Graham. And I am pooing my pants. Pooing my pants.
Well, talking of narrative, it's not in the box set, but Jan, Sunderland away to Everton.
Oh,
There's a little bit of narrative there, isn't there?
I'm split with this because Sunderland are doing, I think it's fair to say, very, very well in the Premier League and their return to the Premier League. And that is all I care about, is just finishing one place above the relegation spot and staying up. But if we go there and just absolutely rip Moyes apart, rip Moyes' team apart, I should say. Although maybe I mean both of those. Then that would be wonderful. But no, I mean, you know, that would be nice. But I mean, I love the FA Cup and I'm very much looking forward to the third round. I think it's amazing and there'll be some great ties there. But with that one, I really don't care. I don't want any of our players to get injured or, you know, in any way jeopardise our chances of staying up.
Yeah. Qualifying for Europe, you mean?
I'm not even thinking about such thing. You're going
to stay up then. What you should be thinking about is qualifying for Europe.
Yes.
I'm not going to be drawn into that.
You should be thinking about winning the FA Cup and
not being drawn into that.
Well, if you want to read about the games that are in the box set this weekend, including Arsenal's trip to Portsmouth, which, oh, that's got Liverpool's trip to Plymouth vibe all over it, then get along to sofpodcast.com and click on the link for the weekend box set, where you can sign up for our Substack, telling you the 7 games that we think you should be watching from Friday to Sunday. And it's free. It's all entirely free. Make this your New Year's resolution to read the weekend box set every week and be really clued up about what's going on in football. Be as clued up as we are.
Yes, absolutely. As clued up as we are.
But that's all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry DeFillon, it's goodbye.
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 Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football, or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now!
It's not like...
That would be great though, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Big Ange.
We want to see Big Ange back. We want to see him back. We want to see it happen.
Yeah. Yes. Not at our club, but...
No, near my club.
Specifically at Celtic is what we wanted to see.
Yes, that's it.